Throwback Sunday. How many of you were there? I was 10. I was 10 when Carrie Livgren wrote that song, and they were touring, and I never went to a Kansas concert, but I really liked them. And when I was a kid, this was my favorite song. It was just my favorite song. I loved the guitar licks, the harmony. It was mesmerizing. It was hypnotizing, this song. I used to go around singing it all over. I used to wish I could play the guitar like that. I used to kind of air jam, you know, you know, it was just you know, as a kid, as a teenager, and I loved that song. However, as I grew older, I started to consider and think about the lyrics to songs. You know how kids are, they just hear a cool song, they love it. You know, after you get a little older, you start to think about what they're actually singing. And as I did that, I didn't like the song anymore. I just didn't like it anymore. It's a hopeless song. It's full of despair. You know, don't hang on. Really? Check out. Don't hang on. Give up. I thought to myself, later in my teen years, I thought, how sad to feel this way about life. It's depressing. But the truth is that many people do feel this way about life. They see no meaning in life. They see no purpose. And certainly nothing beyond the grave. And the result is despair. The result is hopelessness. And thus, in human experience, disillusionment. Because without answers to some of these deep questions, especially the reality of human suffering, it is just an insurmountable topic. You cannot deal with that because there's so much human suffering, and you can't make any sense of it whatsoever when you have a dust in the wind philosophy of life. As I grew up, I always enjoyed every aspect of Christmas. My father loved Christmas. The tree was up maybe before Thanksgiving. He played his trumpet. When you guys play the brass, it always makes me think of him. He loved Christmas, and I enjoyed every aspect of Advent and leading right up to Christmas. And that's because as I look back, as I think about Christmas right now, Christmas is pregnant with hope. Christmas literally is pregnant with hope. The coming of Jesus brings such promise and purpose to life. It's full of it. C.S. Lewis defined hope as a continual looking forward to the eternal world. And that's what the reality of incarnation and crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus provides for all who would place their faith in him. And that's why the Apostle Paul wrote to the Galatians, "Through the Spirit, we eagerly await by faith the righteousness for which we hope. This righteousness comes from God by faith in Jesus. This righteousness is what we need because we have no righteousness of our own. We need Christ's righteousness because nothing we possess can put us in a right standing with God. All of our human effort falls short because of our sin." C.S. Lewis, who was once an atheist, said this, "For those who do not embrace this hope, there is an inescapable emptiness and joylessness. And the nagging question, the point of life, what's the point not to mention human suffering, as I said. Leo Tolstoy, in his work, A Confession, he spoke for all honest agnostics and atheists when he wrote this, and I'm quoting him. He said, "My question, that which at the age of 50 brought me to the verge of despair, it was the simplest of questions, living in the soul of every man, living in my soul, a question without an answer to which one cannot live. It was this: what will come of what I'm doing today or tomorrow? What will come of my whole life? Why should I live? Why should I wish for anything? Why should I do anything?" And he said it can also be expressed in this way: is there any meaning in my life that the inevitable death awaiting me does not destroy? You write that down, friends, that question. Is there any meaning in my life that the inevitable death awaiting me does not destroy? That is the silent cry of the agnostic. That's the disturbing thought that the atheist cannot escape. What's the point? What's it all about? And those are great questions, profound questions that we need to embrace. You need to wrestle with them, young people. You have permission to go there, to ask that. I believe that it is in the gospel of Jesus Christ that the answers are found, beginning with Christmas, culminating with the death, the resurrection of Jesus. You see, the Bible teaches that the one who dies with the most toys doesn't win anything. That's what the Bible teaches. Health and wealth are pleasant, but they do not promise life to the full. Jesus promises life to the full. He said, "I've come that you may have life, have it abundant, have it full." Jesus said, "My peace I give you, my peace I leave with you." There are billionaires who would give up their fortune just to have some. And what many don't understand is that it's free. But you have to let go of the earth to have some of heaven. You have to let go of yourself in order to have Jesus. You have to let go of your pride in order to approach the humble stable where the Christ child lay. And so I want to think about truths from Hebrews chapter 2, which Lynn read, and how they trump dust in the wind. Truths that trump. And by the way, I want to start by saying that Carrie Livgren, about 7 years after he wrote this song, became a Christian. If you look at Kansas Greatest Hits, which I have the CD up there, you can borrow it, okay? You can borrow it. Look at those greatest hits: "Carry On My Wayward Son," "Dust in the Wind," "The Devil Game." I could go on and on there, 5 or 6 other ones. That is a journey, a philosophical journey to salvation. And so here's what I need you to do. Give people permission to wrestle with faith. Don't say, you're not going to say Merry Christmas. It's easy, does it? Give people permission to think and to write if necessary. The process of writing music and thinking about lyrics and life and people and circumstances and death and So many issues is what brought Livgren to faith. He and another band member. And so I want to talk to you this morning about truths in the second chapter of Hebrews that trump a despairing philosophical view. Truth number one, we are not just dust in the wind. We are created in the image of God. Look at verse 6. What are mere mortals that you should think of them, or a son of man that you should care for him? Yet you made them only a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honor. He's talking about people. He's talking about you. You gave them authority over all things. You gave them responsibility, mastery over all things. Now, because of our sin, we are slaves, not masters. But initially, that was given because of the value God placed upon us over all things, over all creatures of the ground, creatures of the sea. What distinguishes us as humans? Love, emotion, and worship. Humans are the only creatures on earth who have the capacity for worship, the intelligence to be rational, philosophical, to embrace the God who created them. Now, many create a God in their own image, but the capacity is there. We are not just dust in the wind. We're created in God's image. We are not just another drop of water in an endless sea. No, we're not nameless. We're not insignificant. Each person is unique. Each person is valuable, significant. Each person has an individual fingerprint. Do you realize that every single human being that has ever lived has a unique fingerprint? The psalmist wrote, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made." Hello. "I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made." I'm not just another drop of water in an endless sea. I'm not nameless. I'm not insignificant. God knows your name. "Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book." That is not a story of insignificance. "Before one of them came to be, you knew all about me. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them." So there's going to be a moment for you ladies, for you women. You miscarried in heaven. You're going to embrace that child. Kathy and I have 5 children. Dust in the wind. We're not just dust in the wind. All we do does not just crumble to the ground. God has created us for impact. Our influence is destined to leave a legacy that will long outlive us. When I look at some of you folks, your golden years, some of you, honestly, 20 years ago, you didn't even think you'd be here now. You know, you thought you'd be in heaven by now, but you're still here. Here's what you need to know: your legacy, it lives on. You're built for eternity. Your influence is it carries on after you. As I think about my father, this Christmas I'm thinking about him a lot. This is my second Christmas without him. Thinking about his trumpet and just the impact that he made, not just on his family, his children, his grandchildren, but the communities that he lived in. And I realized he wasn't just another drop of water in an endless sea. His life had significance. And so does yours. God has created us for impact. Life in Christ gives birth to meaning and significance and purpose. And we're so much more than dust in the wind. And therefore, we should hang on. We shouldn't just check out. We should see that we're needed, that we're necessary. We should hang on because Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We should hang on because we have this hope as an anchor for the soul. And in Hebrews 2, we see three beautiful things about Jesus. He is three things. He is brother, he is captain, and he is king. Jesus calls us brother and sister. Jesus leaves the glory of heaven and puts on human flesh, and he bleeds for us. He enters into to the earthiness of life and temptations and blood and sweat and tears and struggles. He's our brother. And he has more than our back. He has our soul. I'm the youngest of six kids. I had three older brothers. Jim and Bob, child number four, child number five, were interesting guys. Jim was a football player who just could run right over people. My brother Bob was a little smaller in stature, but he was rough. And he got into some scuffles, we'll just say. Okay, I was 4 years behind Bob, 7 years behind Jim. Never once in elementary, junior high, or senior high did anyone ever bother me. Because they were eyewitnesses to some unfortunate circumstances for certain people. On a football field, and just in the neighborhood, my brothers had my back, and my brother Bob, he married a girl that I graduated from high school with, so he was around. Started dating her when she was in ninth grade, and they've been married for 31 years or whatever. And so he was around my entire high school career. No one ever even looked at me in the wrong kind of a way. And here's what I need you to know, that Jesus Christ is your brother who has more than your back. He has your soul. He has purchased your salvation. He is brother, and he is captain. There's the Greek word that's translated a perfect leader in verse 10 means literally captain of our salvation. He has put things in order such that we can follow Jesus into the reality of salvation. That's what this leadership is about. That God has put things in order so that those who follow him into glory can do so easily, in the sense that they don't have to work for it. Human effort is not a part of the mathematical equation of salvation. Rather, it is grace by faith through Christ. And so he is brother, he is captain. Listen, what we do see is Jesus, who was given a position a little lower than the angels, and because he suffered death for us, he is now crowned with glory and honor. Yes, by God's grace, Jesus tasted death for everyone. God, for whom and through whom everything was made, chose to bring many people into glory. And it was only right that he should make Jesus, through his suffering, a perfect leader, fit to bring them into their salvation. A brother, a captain, and finally a king. A king who leaves his throne and takes off his crown and dies for you. What king does that? If you're like me this time of year, you get into movie mode. You're watching all the old classics. And you read, you look at history, you watch movies, kings and kingdoms. What word comes to your mind when you think of kings and kingdoms? I know it comes to my mind. Taxes. Kings tax people. That's the theme of every storyline. But our king comes and pays the bill, and the check clears. Our king comes and lays down his life. Our king comes and he spills out his blood. Our king comes and he sympathizes with us by experiencing everything that we experience, because he loves us. He does not exploit us. Rather, he redeems us. He brings significance and dignity and beauty to our lives. And because God's children are human beings, made of flesh and blood, the Son also became flesh and blood. For only as a human being could he die, and only by dying could he break the power of the devil, who holds the power of death. And only in this way could he set free all who have lived their lives as slaves to the fear of dying. When my sister died, I was 6 years old. I remember she died 3 days before my first day of first grade. She was 18. She fainted in our house, and she did not come to. I was there when my parents were frantically trying to do something with her. They called the ambulance. I was there when the ambulance came. I was six. She was DOA, Akron General Hospital. I wanted to go to my first day of first grade. I remember my parents let me go a half a day for show and tell. I got up and told my class that my sister had died. For months after my sister died, I cried myself to sleep. I thought I was going to die. I was a slave to the fear of death. Until one night, my mother heard me crying, and she came into my bed, and she said, "What are you crying about?" And I told her, and she said, "We do not need to fear death." She talked to me about heaven, about the fact that Karen was a person, my sister, who knew Jesus. And she sang about Jesus. She had a beautiful voice. She loved Jesus, and so we need not to fear death, because death is not an end but a beginning. And Karen was in a place waiting upon the judgment, but not in fear, not to be judged or damned, but to be absent from the body was to be present with the Lord. And I remember processing that, and I kid you not, for 44 years, I've not been afraid of death. It's a grace upon grace for me. But I know why. I know why. Because Jesus beat the hell out of death. Because Jesus beat the fear out of death. And Jesus beat the end out of death. There is no end in life. Death is the pathway to glory. And that is the hope of the gospel. And when I fully understood that, I said, so much for dust in the wind. I still like the guitar, though. Well, let me close by saying this. I love this. When Winston Churchill died, it was known to those close to him that his funeral, which would take place at St. Paul's Cathedral, was already planned. He planned it. Churchill planned his own funeral. He included many of the great hymns of the church, and he used the eloquent Anglican liturgy. And at his direction, a bugler positioned high in the dome at St. Paul's intoned, and after the benediction, he played the sound of taps, the universal signal that the day is over. That was not a surprise, but then came the surprise, a dramatic turn, as Churchill had instructed. After taps was finished, another bugler placed on the other side of the great dome played the notes of reveille. It's time to get up, it's time to get up, it's time to get up in the morning. How about that? That was Churchill's testimony, that at the end of history, the last note will not be taps. It'll be reveille. It's time, the time has come for all things to be made new, and for eternity to be without tears, without cancer, without pain, without miscarriages, without divorce, without friction, tension, without so many of the human ailments and frailties that just frustrate us and at times ruin Christmas. If the truth were known right now, a lot of you people are just trying to be real careful about your relationships because you don't want Christmas to have any trouble. It's people. It's us. It's you. We're all living on the island of misfit toys. And we're trying. Don't think the Friedlands are exempt. Okay? I'm on my best behavior. Okay? Christmas is pregnant with hope. Hope of the world. Just abandon yourself to the hope of the world, to Jesus Christ.